You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Welcome back, gentlemen. We had ourselves a little bit of a break this past week, vacation and whatnot. We try to avoid that, but sometimes it's just inevitable. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great.
I'm starting to move a little bit here on this early Sunday morning.
Early, man. I've already done like 90 minutes of working out.
Most folks over 40 don't call 9:45 a.m. early.
Yeah, Jim. The older you get, the earlier you're supposed to get up. Didn't you get the memo?
I'm not like normal teenagers. I'm in my 40s.
Jim got a head injury when he was 16, and he's still just been 16 for the last 25 years.
You just came up with an idea of a new TV show.
I'm just single.
Well, we've had a lot of stuff happen. Let's jump into it. I've been running the iOS 11 beta for a couple of weeks, and I've got to say I've been really impressed. This was my first week traveling on a plane with the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which worked a lot better than I thought it would be. Actually, it worked about as well as I thought it would be. That was why I got the 10.5-inch. And even the guy in front of me, I posted this on Instagram yesterday, I'm on this flight back from Dallas. Originally, it was great. I had a whole row to myself in the economy comfort section until one of the Delta employees that was flying free decided to go sit in the window seat, which I shouldn't complain about, but let's be honest, they wouldn't let anyone else pop up from coach and go do that. So that always kind of annoys me. But at least, you know, I had no one sitting next to me, which was great. However, in the entire row in front of me, only one person even moved their seat, and it was the guy in front of me in his dad jeans. So that was kind of annoying. Didn't really like it. However, the 10.5 dealt with it a lot better than the 12.9. I could actually put the keyboard on it and still had room to type. So, you know, I'd call that a win from a form factor perspective. And are you guys using iOS 11 beta on your iPad yet?
I was thinking about installing it this afternoon, in fact.
I have it on mine. I've had it on there for about a week now. Same as you. I've enjoyed it. I haven't had too many issues with apps not running or stuff not working. I've seen a couple of things that I've noticed. One being when I want to connect my AirPods, I didn't really see a menu option to go pick the AirPods from the control center now. So I had to go into settings, Bluetooth to click the AirPods. The only thing I saw on control center was the screen sharing. So I don't know where that's at.
Here's where I'm going to tut-tut a little bit, Jim. You do long presses on these things, and you'll get options that will pop up.
I even tried the long presses, and I didn't see it.
I'm almost certain, because I've popped over to my AirPods doing the same thing, and they've been there.
Just a question, is it a long press or a 3D Touch press?
3D Touch does not exist on the iPad.
Oh, that's right. My bad.
Yeah, I thought I tried that. Yeah, where I did a long press, because some of them had those options. I'll try it again. I just on the plane, you know, like I was watching Glow, and I was trying to switch over to Bluetooth headset, and it was, you know, not there. So otherwise, I've enjoyed it, and definitely had the same experience with you as far as the form factor is much better for me on planes. I've had probably four or five flights now with the new iPad already, and used it every time. It's been great, so.
The stability for a beta has been remarkable, I think. I've had some issues. You noticed that Parallels Desktop, I guess, doesn't work. Or, I'm sorry, Parallels Access doesn't work on the iOS 11 beta. I've noticed, I think, I want to say there's a weird bug in Tweetbot that I noticed that if you try to tweet a link, if you start typing text and then tweet the link, it'll crash it every time. However, if you paste the link first and then start typing, you're okay.
That's a weird one.
That is a weird. I think the drag and drop is causing some issues. This week's episode of Upgrade with Jason Snell and Mike Hurley on Relay FM. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. They've done some pretty extensive things, and I thought that was just me. They noticed it as well, so that bug exists. They verified that happened to them. Twitterific also has some issues, though I don't use Twitterific. But, you know, I've seen some bugs, I guess is what I'm saying. The biggest adjustment for me has been the way you kill an app. Like, I'm still used to that.
Yeah.
I really don't like it. Because, again, that's another thing where you have to do a long press, right? You double tap on the home button, and you have to long press what you want to kill and then hit the little button, which is more Mac-like, but it was so much easier before to just double tap and swipe up, and you're on your way. So I do miss that. Different is not always bad, but... And I realize the trade-off.
As Brian and I both make the swipe up
made sign, that gesture, right?
We're talking, yeah.
But I do miss that a bit. But I will say that the multitasking has been very good. The screenshot, I don't know if you've used the screenshot and markup ability on it. So I do have a case that I'll link to in the show notes that I got from Amazon. And I think we tweeted it from the Infinite Loopback Twitter account last night. It's a cheap case from Amazon. It's like $15. But it's very sturdy, it's very well made, and it has a holder for the Apple Pencil, which I've used this case. It's great. So I always have my pencil right next to my iPad, so I've been more inclined to use it than I ever have before, because it's always there. And my sister-in-law had asked a question, like she was switching a SIM card out from one device to another, and she couldn't figure out how to get the SIM card out of the SIM tray that it was in, the spacer, I guess, that you when you have a small SIM and you put it in a device that was older. And I keep telling her, pop it out of the little metal case. And she just couldn't wrap her mind around it. So I did a screenshot on the iPad, took out the pencil, and scribbled over the metal part, and then drew arrows saying, pop out here of this. So having that ability, that when you do a screenshot, that it automatically appears in the lower part of the screen, you touch it, and it automatically takes you into edit mode, that is something they should have had forever ago. I mean, that is great. So these little refinements have made a big difference. And honestly, that form factor, when I do things side by side, it hasn't been a big deal like I thought it would. So even if it is like two iPhone sized apps, that's good enough for me. Have you done anything special on the beta there, Jim? Have you had any sort of glitches, bad things happen?
Just getting used to the new dock / taskbar has been a little different. I did do some side-by-side on the plane. Was it Thursday night? I had to work on a Word document, and I had a kind of a source Word document. And so I had kind of two of them open side-by-side, one from OneDrive, one from Word. And I was able to do everything I needed to there. Some of the type was, you know, obviously a little bit smaller with the screen setup, but no issues there whatsoever. Like you said, Parallels Access is the only thing I've seen that I start up and it just immediately insta crashes on me. But yeah, no, I've really enjoyed the form factor. It feels great in your hand to read and just to use without the keyboard. And then when you need the keyboard, it's plenty big enough to type all you know, type as long as I've had to type on it. So I've really enjoyed it. It was great on vacation. And I was even able to use it tethering. I had my nephew with me all week for a vacation. And I would have him, when we were places, I would have him tethered to the iPad. That way he wasn't tethered to my phone. So, you know, I kind of had it.
With a larger battery,
yeah, you're not killing your phone. Yeah, I had a different device. And I didn't have that bar across the top of my phone, which is kind of annoying.
You really hate that bar.
Screen. Well, on the smaller screen, it really does. It pushes down everything. So yeah, that bar annoys me.
It's like surfing the web OCD, on I guess. Facebook.
Yeah, no, I get you. I have a Plus phone, so it doesn't bother me as much. But the slow speed always tends to get me. Speaking of new devices, how is the new KB Lake MacBook Pro working out for you, Jim? That you got?
No issues so far. I to be honest, I haven't used it a whole lot. That Thursday night that it came in, I did a full migration assistant restore from the old Mac to the new Mac. That went flawlessly. I was shocked, quite frankly, how well that worked. I'd never used it before. You know, when I buy a Mac, it's generally 2 or 3 years after. And so I just want to set up from new. Well, this one, you know, I had just recently set up that MacBook Pro 13 again to do work on it for the last month. I didn't want to have to go through all that again. So I'm like, let's give the migration assistant a try. Worked flawlessly. I had to type in some passwords for things like Dropbox, and I can't even remember what else, you know, a couple of things. Otherwise, it's been great. I haven't had any issues with it. The keyboard is still crappy. I mean, it works, but it's still just, you know, for my preferences from the old model to the new model, I just don't like the new keyboard on this one, which is why I have an external Bluetooth at home now and an external Bluetooth at work that I'll just use with it, and I won't be typing on directly on the laptop unless I'm, you know, somewhere like sitting in an airport or something. So,
well, I guess since you haven't been able to put it through its paces, you haven't really noticed the benefits of the KB Lake. And it's not like you were moving from a slow Mac to a faster Mac either, but you said you used the migration assistant tool. You didn't use anything like Super Duper or Carbon Copy Cloner or anything like that. You just use the migration tool?
Just the migration tool. Two dongles, one on each end with a gigabit Ethernet between it, plugged them in together, said migrate from one to the other. It took maybe about 2 hours. I'm not sure. I went to sleep and got up the next morning and it was done. It said it was going to take about 2 hours, and it probably would have took a lot less time than that, but I had about 80 gigs of television and movies on there that I didn't realize was on there. So if I hadn't moved that, it probably would have been a lot faster. So
that's your cached Dropbox drive that's probably doing that for you.
All that in 2 hours, that's pretty impressive, especially over a single gigabit.
Well, to be fair, he went to sleep, so he doesn't know.
I mean, but yeah, it said 2 hours when I started it up, so.
It would be nice, like you could do with your terminal, where I'll kick off a job on terminal and then go sit down on the couch or whatever and watch television, and I'll have it do where it says, say this, like say done, and then all of a sudden you hear Alex, which is one of the, you know, the AI voices, and he'll go, done. And then I'll get up and come over and it's through. It'd be nice if they could integrate that into Migration Assistant.
One of the things I did notice this week that was kind of weird, I forget what app I was using. I noticed that location services were completely turned off on the new Mac. Like somehow that didn't migrate correctly. And so I had to go into security and privacy on the Mac and tell it, yeah, you can use location services and things like that. So that's like the only thing this week that I've seen where it was a setting that somehow didn't move over. But everything else has been great. We'll see. I'll put it through its paces at work this week, but I haven't used it much. I was on vacation this week, so that's why I was mostly on my phone. Or if I was back at the hotel at night, I would just get on the iPad instead of the MacBook. So
I can't bring myself to put the iOS 11 beta on my phone. I don't think I'm probably going to do that just because I depend on my phone too much. And the phone features don't seem as compelling as the iPad features. This seems like the release that's iPad centric.
I definitely agree with you there. I'm not going to make that jump yet. This is definitely an iPad release, which I'm all about. I've been wanting this for, you know, how many years. So yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm just excited for the new phone that seems to be more and more people talking about every week.
So let's talk about the pricing and strategy behind this year's new iPhone. So John Gruber over at Daring Fireball had posted an article speculating that if Apple releases a Pro model of phone that's an OLED screen, that the prices could be considerably higher than what we've seen in previous years. And the gist of it seemed to be around the expectation that it would be so supply constrained that to set expectations properly or to drive down the demand a little bit, having a higher incremental price, I mean a higher overall price than what we've seen with the incremental prices on iPhones in the past. The iPhone prices in the past have remained pretty much flat. I think when the Plus models were introduced, they went up about $20 or $30 per model. But other than that, they've been fairly consistent. And I guess that whipped up quite a furor on Twitter. I thought that was not an unreasonable position to take. I don't know that they would probably do an iPhone Pro. I mean, that seems a little odd to me that they would go that route. I don't know. Then again, I thought the iPad Pro seemed a little weird, but if the only differentiator there is going to be the screen, then I don't know if that would seem to merit that much of a price increase. Because I think he was speculating that putting an OLED screen, they'd knock the price up another $300 for that. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. It's not that I don't think they could get away with it. I just don't think as a strategy it makes much sense. Every year, phones are constrained. Every time they release a new iPhone, they can't make them fast enough. They're making 70 million a quarter or whatever it is. I mean, it's an insane number when you think about the scale. And I don't think whatever you price, it's necessarily going to drive down that demand. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think people are just, they're going to buy what they're going to buy. And if, you know, you've got the people who aren't necessarily you would consider the pro users, but they're definitely the ones who always have to have the biggest of the latest one. I mean, those are the same people that buy, you know, if they sell a car in three trim levels, they're going to buy the upper tier of that trim level. Same goes with this phone. They're going to buy the largest capacity with the biggest screen and the pro version of it with the newest screen technology that the company's offering. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be a real problem. The only thing you'll see is the people complaining about, well, it's not available yet, or I can't get it yet because, you know, they're out of stock and I'm just going to wait, you know, the extra 3 weeks it takes to get one in. But it seems silly to me that Apple or any other company for that matter, the only distinction between models would be the screen, you know, the screen technology itself. There would have to be some other, you know, go-go gadget features that made it that phone $300 more, you know, seems what would be worth to the consumers as $300 more than just a screen that may be brighter or edge to edge or lighter or something.
So I think number one, you're going to get the OLED screen, which is supposed to be edge to edge. So that's something it's OLED plus it's edge to edge instead of having a bezel like most iPhones have had. Well, all iPhones have had forever, even though it's kind of been shrinking a little bit. And then there's also wireless charging, which, as Gruber has said, may not be available as soon as the phone is available, but it's coming. And so that could be just the new models.
let's not call that wireless charging. I'm going to go off on that in a minute. But yes, a new charging method.
Yeah. So, yeah, inductive charging, I guess, is more of an accurate word there. So between those two, I mean, that's two, or if you want to call it three features, saying it's edge to edge. You know, they could put more RAM in it. They could put a better processor in it. But to differentiate that 8 from what they could call a 7S for the other two phones. So, I mean, I think the speculation right now is that there would be three phones. There'd be a 7S, the 7S Plus, and then this OLED model, which would be the 8. Well, I agree that it definitely should cost more. Some of the numbers he threw out, like in the 1400 range, did seem a little high. Not that, I mean, I say that, and then, I'll be the first one in line if I could be there to pay it, because... And that's the other thing about these phones is most people, even today, most people don't pay for a whole phone up front anymore. I mean, you're paying for any phone you get is going to be split up in 24 monthly payments, more than likely. I mean, that's the way I pay, 20, 24, ever how many you split it up. So, you know, whatever the cost is divided by 24 months, and, you know, whether I'm paying $40 a month or whether I'm paying $60 a month for that phone, I'm still going to be paying it. And I think a lot of people are in that case. Maybe I'm not a good judge, or we're not a good judge, because we're, quite frankly, just addicts, you know, super fanboys to Apple, and we're going to buy what's there. You know, I just don't think, when you say $1,000 and you say $1,500, that sounds like a lot of money. But when you say $42 a month and $56 a month, that does, you know, it kind of pulls it back a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think sort of gets lost in this. Nobody's going to pay probably the full price up front anyway, but there is sort of this expectation of what a phone should cost. And if anybody could probably get away with altering the pricing significantly, I think Apple could, but I don't know that Apple would. I don't know that if I'm looking at, if there's going to be a knockoff Samsung phone in a couple of months that does the same thing or looks the same way, and it's not charged, they're not charging the same price, that's going to look that won't make for as compelling of an argument. I know that Apple doesn't normally price their things in comparison to that, but for this product, the one that the company hinges upon, right? This is one that's, you know, if iPads don't sell well, Apple will be okay. If iPhones don't sell well, then Apple's in trouble. That becomes the narrative. And the other thing you have to consider, which I didn't see mentioned in the article, is when they announce these phones, oftentimes you'll see people who order within the first week of September when they're announced, and they don't get them till December, right? I'm there at 301, like, bam, I already have it in my bag, what I want, or the options already. So I'm through the checkout process, and usually I have mine the first week, usually the first day. But for a lot of people, that's a problem. The scenario that I envision, if this is true, is let's say they don't put it on pre-order. If they do a pro model, they don't put it on pre-order the same day as the other phones. That creates a really weird situation that could really potentially screw Apple if you think about it. So let's say September 15th, you know, whatever the date, I don't know, I'm just making one up. They announce the phones and they say on September 18th, you'll be able to order, you know, the iPhone 7S and the 7S Plus. And sometime in October or November, you'll be able to order this new iPhone Pro. Folks like you and me, it would be the first year we're not ordering on the same day that they make the ones generally available. And there may be a lot of people who do the same thing. All of a sudden, they sell significant numbers that are lower. Basically, they sort of Osborne themselves, kind of, sort of, by doing that. And I would hope that if they were going to do this, it wouldn't be like an AirPod situation where it'll be coming soon. And then, you know, soon means the last week of December before you can even order it. So I would hope if they do this model, even if there's going to be supply constraint, at least allow you to put the pre-orders in on a certain day, because otherwise what's going to happen is you're going to have people that are going to hold off probably in greater numbers than they anticipate, who just won't go for the 7S or the 7S Plus. At least that's my fear. Would you guys do that if that were a case and you were doing you're in the market for a new phone? If they didn't make it available that same day, you wouldn't go and just get a 7S or a 7S Plus, right? You'd hold out, right?
It depends on how compelling the difference was. That's really a hard question for someone like you or me. Well, maybe not for you, Brian, because you're like, I must have the biggest phone. But it may, you know, not that I'm dying to have a new phone or I'm working on a broken phone. So it would be, say, you know, I'm waiting for September 15 and that phone, you know, I'm saying, well, God, my phone's broken or this is broken on it. And I really need a new phone. So I can't wait for September 15 to get here. And then and they say, but in October or sometime in next month, there'll be this other greater, better phone. I may just tell myself I can't wait. But if that weren't the situation, if it was one of those things where, like we're talking about, like you have a working phone, I have a working phone, and it would be probably worthwhile to me to have the better phone, then I probably would wait and it wouldn't be a thing. Even if it did take, you know, you wake up on October 15 at 3 a.m. and pre-order, but you still don't get it till December or some kind of weird situation happens where they have a strange supply thing, but everything worked with the version that came out in September or the previous month. That's a difficult question. It really is to me anyway.
I would definitely wait for the 8. I mean, I want that OLED display. I want the top of the line phone. I do think that it's a definite issue for Apple. I think in that case, they would probably take pre-orders for all three, and one would just ship a lot later. I don't think they would say you can pre-order these two on this Wednesday, and then next 3 weeks from now Wednesday you can pre-order the 8. I think they would still put all three together, because like you said, it wouldn't be a disaster for Apple, but it would appear to be a disaster for Apple if even 30% of the people, you know, didn't order a phone that day, or 50% didn't order a phone that day because they're waiting for the other one. And then when you have initial orders and they report, you know, 14 million and it should have been 21 or 24 million because people are waiting. I just think they would put them all on sale on the same day. It's just when you ordered your 8, you know, your shipping date would be a month from now. And I think it'll be interesting, and we can look back on this moment, but it could be that the iPhone 8 turns out to be the AirPods for all of next year, where pretty much anytime you order one, it's 6 to 8 weeks before you can get one. We're coming up on, you know, 6 to 9 months for AirPods now, right? And they're still on effectively a back order from Apple's website. Every now and then you can catch them in stock at Best Buy or something, but
they're still so supply constrained that when they go in stock in third-party retailers, that it makes my news feeds of, hey, if you're looking for AirPods, they're at Best Buy today, or they're at AT&T stores today, or like, and that they came out at the a week before Christmas, and here we are, you know, the first week of, just past the first week of July, and it's still scant. Like, if you go to their website, it's still hard to get these things. That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Add them to your cart, and it says ship date.
Pretty much. Question mark, question mark.
Eventually. It just says eventually. So, I mean, I would definitely wait. I mean, because I know this is, you know, I'm going to wait for the nicest phone. The other question, so here's a question for you, Brian. So we've seen there's going to be three phones. There's going to be this, the 4-whatever-inch 7S, the 5-whatever-inch 7 Plus. If the 8 doesn't have a Plus model and you have to go back to a smaller size, would you do that, or would you want the 7S Plus for the bigger screen?
Well, the question there is, will this Pro model phone, I don't want to call it the iPhone 8 because I think it would probably be called Pro or something comparable, but if it had an edge-to-edge design, would it be analogous to the iPad Pro 10.5-inch, where you have more screen size and virtually the same form factor? Ooh. See, if that's the case, then that would be almost a compelling argument to do that. I would absolutely. I would more than likely give strong consideration to going to that Pro phone for that reason. Because just like with the iPads, the problem is everyone wants that bigger screen. No one wants to carry that bigger screen. I love how things look on my plus size phone. They're great. I don't like the form factor in my hand, and I don't like it in my pocket, but I have to have that trade-off to get that bigger screen. With the iPad, I love the 13-inch screen. I mean, it's great. It's not great when you're sitting in a plane. It's not great when you're wanting to just sit on your couch and idly browse the web or whatever. And it's just a little bit, it's just past that point of comfort where it's ungainly a little bit. That's where the plus size phone is for me. So if they can get that same sort of resolution or screen experience in a 7 form factor, man, I would be all over that, I think.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. If it fits that Goldilocks spot like the 10.5 did, where it's the smaller form factor or somewhat just a little bit bigger, but also has the much bigger screen, that would be very nice.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the case. I mean, I really wish they would do that if there is. I mean, we're speaking about these things as if they're in certainty, right? Supply chain leaks, maybe that's the case. I'm hoping that if they do the 7S and 7S Plus, that maybe, you know, they break that cycle and start doing a new, you know, break out of that mold a little bit. I'm hoping not only the highest end phone would have edge to edge with no bezel or bezel-less or close to bezel-less, but if it is, then that would be a compelling reason for me. The other thing is I'm on the iPhone upgrade plan, so every year I'm getting a new phone anyway, guaranteed. So to me, if it went up, you know, $5 a month, $6 a month, whatever the differential is, to, because I already do have a 7S Plus with 256, and, you know, I mean, that's already, I think, like 40-something bucks a month. And if it went up, you know, another $5 or $6 a month, it would make no difference to me. Just the ability to say, to get in line and say, when this is available, I want to have it as quickly as possible. I wouldn't want it to be like the AirPods, like, well, at some point we're going to take orders for this, and then some random Tuesday in December, it pops up for 30 minutes, and if you just happen to be away from your computer, you're screwed. Which is why when the AirPods went on sale, I was texting you guys like, go, deploy now, just because if you want to get them soon, that's how, what you had to do. And some people didn't take me up on that, Jim, and paid a premium on Craigslist.
Look, I really didn't think I really didn't think I would like them. And then I bought it on Craigslist and I ordered a set online, and stupid me, I gave them to a girl, and now I don't have two sets, I only have one.
Here's Jim. Would you wear my class ring?
AirPods are the new class ring.
Never getting that back.
You know, I thought I was going to send, I had almost convinced myself to send in this second unopened pair that I have. Because, again, mine were having some issues a few months ago, probably February or March, whenever 6 weeks before mid-May was, or mid-June. And I thought to myself, you know what, I better go ahead and order another pair, because even if these are still covered under Apple Care, but they're, you know, I don't want to be without them. I use them all the time. So it's like, I'll just go ahead and pre-order now. And if these die in the next 6 weeks, then I'll have a backup copy. Well, those came in. My originals didn't die. And the problem that I have now is like, you know, maybe I could just go ahead and send these into Colorware and get these painted like jet black. I had almost talked myself into doing that. Colorware seems to have removed the option where you could send in unopened AirPods and that you have to buy them directly from them. And that wasn't a problem when I ordered these. But apparently that's not an option on the website. And I was watching their Twitter and some of their replies to people for other devices where they used to allow them to send them in. Now, I know, you know, it's gross if you take your AirPods and, hey, just, this has been in my ears and sweated and everything else, paint them, please. I know they don't want to do that. And they even said, we will only do the ones that are unopened. But come on, guys, that stinks. I was so ready to pay that premium and have some jet black AirPods, and now I won't.
I bet it's because they couldn't get them to sell them. So they want you to send yours in just so they have them to do. If they couldn't get enough of them to do them themselves, and then once they were finally able to get some ordered to be able to do them and sell them, it, you know, and then that's when they took away the option for you to send in your own. I mean, that's almost got to be it. Right.
Well, considering the still limited supply of them, it seems odd that they would remove that option simply because if you can't get them, there's no reason why they can't get them either. My other argument about why they would take the option away was it may be a logistics nightmare for them, although I can't imagine that many people having that many AirPods to send in, if you will. There was a guitar pedal company, they're still around, and they would let you send in your guitar pedal and they would mod it and add some tweaks and stuff and make it hotter or sound better or whatever than the stock guitar pedal would. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with effect pedals, but basically it just goes between your amplifier and your guitar to change the signal. So anyway, they stopped doing that, and they basically started creating they were already making their own custom pedals, but now they took away that option and they just released their own custom pedals that are basically that modded version that you would have sent in and requested and sent back. I don't know if they do that because they can control the markup of it or what, but it doesn't seem like the worst thing to do when you can kind of control what goes out your door when to the consumer's hands.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good argument too. I don't know. Just disappointing.
It's almost like a pre-sale. Like, we're going to get this started up with you sending us ours, and then once we get it going, then we'll start doing our own. It's kind of like a Kickstarter, right?
No, not even close. You actually get something for your money with this. So, though I will say, I just checked their website, and it's like, if you buy them today, July 9th, it says ship mid-September or something. So,
wow.
So, no thanks. I mean, I would have happily sent in the ones that I had and paid the premium and got them to paint them and send them to me, but not going to do that now.
Jim says Kickstarter, and Brian says prank caller.
I mean, that is like a Kickstarter if you order them now and you don't get them till September. So
no, I think you may not ever get them at all if you Kickstarter. That's my point. With Kickstarter, it's, hey, I'm going to give you money for this idea and you may not be able to ever pull it off. With this, they're saying, yeah, you're going to get it on this date or this time. So,
or with Kickstarter, it may be, it won't be June this year, September this year. It will be June this year, September of next year.
Yeah, it says ship September.
If at all.
September, but not the year.
I've learned what and what not to do on Kickstarter now. I do games and pens, and those generally ship on time. Any kind of electronics or anything, not so much. And I ordered that heavy blanket, and that should ship on time, too. So it's fun. It's you know. I was actually looking yesterday at one of the pens I bought shipped. I noticed up in like the right-hand corner of my Kickstarter, it said I had backed 43 projects over the years on Kickstarter.
Wow, Jim. I think I've backed maybe 10 or 11, and maybe a third of them were technology related. One was this really cool travel mug that I got for my wife, and she loves it. She uses it every day, so that was definitely a good investment.
We could definitely do a rabbit hole show where we just talk about all the crap I've gotten from Kickstarter. Some of it I really liked. Like I recently got a keychain that I really liked, and most of the pens have been really good. And then, you know, some of them that, like one of the first ones was a metal iPhone case that was really sharp, but when you put it on the phone, it basically killed the cell signal completely on the phone. Like, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful metal case that went around it like an iPhone 5 with the metal out there. And so metal to metal like that, it killed the antenna. I mean, just unless you were outside in the middle of, like, open skies.
Standing on a cell tower.
In the city. It did not work. It was really
43.
Funny. And that was like an $80 case or something.
43 projects. 43 is the number of our episode this week. That's how many episodes we've done. That's how many projects you have backed, Jim. That's crazy. I mean, I've made this comparison before, and I'll make it again. But I swear, it's like that type of thing. I'm going to make this phone case. It's Hoyt Axton from Gremlins. It's the dad from Gremlins and his failed. Like, I can never, like, some things they should actually make and then see if it actually works before they ship it. Like, I'm going to make a metal case and stick a phone in it. Faraday cage. Google it.
Hey, so like I said, I've learned my lesson. I know what to back now, what not to back. So now I back, and I'm not even doing all the pins anymore because I've got one that I like so much that I'm not using the other ones. And I've got, like, I think two more pins coming in here. I've got one that's supposed to be here, was supposed to be here yesterday, but the postal service in downtown Dallas is awful. And so we'll see. You know, I'm definitely slowing down with my backing on there. I like all the machined metal things. That's where I've kind of pivoted toward all the things where people are making cool things with, you know, machined copper and titanium and things like that. Keychains and pens and key squares, all that kind of stuff. That stuff's pretty neat, and it generally ships on time. They just need a little bit of money up front to help buy all the metal.
The next thing we see Jim buying is a CNC machine.
I was about to say, yeah, why don't you just get yourself a big...
Oh, I would love that. That would be awesome. Just set it up here in the apartment.
Making his machined toothbrush, his machined...
Kickstarter idea.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Titanium toothbrush.
All right, moving along so you don't have the essential toothbrush. So wireless charging accessory won't be ready at iPhone launch this year. So it is a pet peeve of mine. We've had a past episode where we talked about the next iPhone will include wireless charging, and I actually treated that as if it is actual wireless charging. The fact that people call inductive charging wireless charging is insane to me because why? There's a wire that hooks to the thing that you sit your phone on. Hence, it's not wireless earphones are actually wireless earphones. There's no wires attached. Inductive charging absolutely 100% involves a wire. So that is the thing that gets me. That being said, I find it really, well, okay, there's a couple of things to take in here. First, inductive charge.
Tell me about it, Brian.
Inductive charging is not really a fast process. I know there's some Samsung phones that have it, and that's fine. So I don't know how they're going to address this. The inductive charging on your watch is fine because the capacity of the battery on your watch is very small compared to your phone. So again, I don't know how the current Samsung ones handle it. I should probably do some research on that and see what the average charge time is for it. but I wonder how fast that would be. And I guess one of the reports said that it may use the connector port like we've seen on the iPad. So I guess the phones may end up getting that, which, hey, great. But if you still have to touch it in that way, it's not like a normal inductive charger. The whole benefit of an inductive charger is I lay it down on this plate or sensor in any sort of configuration I want, as long as it's there and you're fine. If you actually have to use a smart connector, then you're still having to arrange it in such a way that it's less obnoxious than plugging in your phone, but not by much. So we'll see.
That just seems like such a silly thing. I mean, how obnoxious is it to plug in your phone? I mean, it's not like you have to arrange your phone in some certain way to plug it in. You just plug the little connector into the bottom of the phone or the side of the phone or whatever kind of phone you have, whatever their orientation they figured out before they released that phone model. It may be some cool whiz-bang thing that, you know, hey, I don't have to plug it in to charge it, but so what? I mean, if it doesn't, the inconvenience of that to me is where the inductive charging takes longer. I mean, I want to be able to plug it in and charge it to 80% within 30 minutes.
I think it's one of those things that demos really well, and then in real life, it takes forever, and it's, you know, it's not as convenient as you think, but it demos really well. And the other issue Apple has here is Samsung has so many phones that do it already. Everybody expects Apple phones to do it. And so I think that's why they would do it. They can do it cheap enough now to where they can say they've got it and it demos really well. But in the exact example Brad just gave, most people want to be able to plug their phone in and hit 80% in, you know, that quick amount of time and grab their phone and go. And this is definitely not going to be, you know, one of those things, unless the inductive charging is in somehow, some way you could reach down and touch it and it'll shock the crap out of you.
That felt great.
The one thing that may work is if it had multiple charging methods. So if the phone still allows you to plug in when you need to plug in, but also had the ability to do the inductive charging, that may not be so bad. I will say with my watch, I like having the little dock that I have with the inductive charger facing out, and I sit the watch down. I don't have to worry about plugging it in, and then when I'm ready to use it, I just go and pull it off, and it's ready to go, and there's no muss, no fuss. Not like lining up when I'm sitting my phone on my 12 South high-rise, having to line up the lightning port and all that is, I mean, it's a first world problem if ever there was one, but it's still, there's a little bit of an annoyance factor. I do like the demo factor. If it's not the only way the phone charges, then I would be okay with it. If it was the only way the phone charged, yeah, I think I'd have a problem with it just because of the slowness, unless there's some way to defy the laws of physics and make that not an issue anymore. But we'll see. So on that same topic of this is a technology that's been around, but, you know, Apple's doing it, there was an article that one of you guys linked to that we'll put in the show notes about Apple's AR is closer to reality than Google's. And I want to address, there's a couple of sentences in that article that really I find a little bit grating. And you can always tell sort of the technological orientation of the writer who writes it based off certain phrases and sentences. And one of the things they mention is Apple always likes to act like it invented a technology, even though other people have been using it. I find it very irritating. I've talked many times about my seemingly caricature of a friend who actually is a real person who's always doing that same sort of thing. Hey man, look, Apple just invented a fingerprint sensor for your phone. Apple just invented. And it's whenever you see these presentations, I'm quick to point out to him, Apple never claims they invented any of this stuff. They didn't say we're the first to do it, right? And the example I like to use is Facebook. Right? MySpace existed, Orkut, Friendster, all these social networks existed, but Facebook was the one that was at scale. Facebook is the most popular. I think it irritates a lot of people that these technologies exist, but they don't catch on until you have a phone that they make 70 million a quarter of, and then, oh, guess what? To many people, hey, that's the first introduction of that technology, even though it's been around for a while. But Apple themselves never say, we invented this. And that's that. When I read stuff like that, Apple actually likes to act like they invented this stuff. It's like, where is the basis of that argument at all? It's never there. It's, hey, we refined it, we've made it so that we think that it's better than someone else's, and this is what we're going to release.
And they put it in 300 million hands.
Stickiness. They put some stickiness on it. I'll argue with you just a little bit. I don't think they come out and say they invented it, but when they announce it, they like to act like it didn't exist. They don't come out and say, we just invented this. But when they come out with things like this, like the inductive charging or things like that, they won't act like it ever existed before. Or like when the Apple, when the pen came out for the iPad Pro, you know, they're not going to...
Pencil.
They're going to... Pencil.
Pen
sorry.
Is the Microsoft.
They're not gonna talk about it previously existing or compare it to anything. It's always just gonna be our product is, you know, this is our new product and it's really great and you know, and that's it. They don't acknowledge that it previously existed, but they don't say that we invented it. And I think that's the same case here with the AR stuff. And that's Apple on everything. They don't compare their products to other people's products. They set a bar for the things that they make, and they compare it to themselves because they think it's beneath them to compare it to previous, you know, iterations of anything because, hey, we've done it better, and so they don't even acknowledge that stuff exists.
But playing devil's advocate, in what world would it behoove them, and not just them, anyone, to acknowledge something exists? So let me give you another example of this. If Toyota, let's say, if Toyota is using something, and all of a sudden Honda comes along and starts doing it too, Honda is not going to act like they invented it, and they're also not going to talk about Toyota's implementation. They're going to say, this is a technology, we have it. It's like there's this weird double standard that exists for Apple, where people sort of put this perception into them. Well, they're arrogant, they're acting like they invented it. No, they're not. It's insane to me, because in no other industry does this seem to happen like that. Like if car companies amongst themselves, one company starts doing something one way and another company starts doing it, we may acknowledge that, hey, they did it first and now they're doing it. But it doesn't, no one goes and says, you know, Tesla acts like they invented this, you know, having an electric car. No, there have been electric cars before. Theirs is the most popular. I mean, I don't understand why there's this perception when it doesn't originate from Apple itself. No other company is going to, every other company that does something that somebody else is doing isn't going to go and compare themselves to it, because that would be stupid. It wouldn't benefit anyone to do that. There's an old adage in advertising that when you're number one, you don't acknowledge number two. And
that's totally Apple. I agree. That's exactly what I was just describing is, you know, they consider themselves number one and 1A and 1B.
If you remember the Pepsi challenge from the 80s, it was always Pepsi, hey, if you drink Pepsi or Coke and you do this, you can't tell the difference. You didn't see Coke pulling that nonsense, as I recall. Now, of course, internally they did, which has led to the whole, you know, New Coke disaster, because they formulated it to taste more like Pepsi. But at least from the advertising perspective, you don't go and talk about the other person, usually. That's I mean, there are violations to this rule. There are exceptions to it. But in general, if you're the market leader, you don't acknowledge number two. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what all that's what you're taught to do when you're in the leadership position. You don't want to remind people that competition exists. But I don't think that's unique to Apple. I just think it's a weird perception to me, because I hear that and I don't know. It just seems strange. If they didn't have it before and they have something now, to say we have this is our spin on it, this is how it works, doesn't seem arrogant to me. It just seems like, what do you expect them to do? Why would they sit around and say, well, you know, there was a thing called Google Glass a few years ago, but it was a complete flop and nobody liked it. I mean, it's either sort of it's uncouth if you go and you start crapping on all of your competitors' failures, and you also remind other people that this technology failed before, or, you know, it exists in these inferior implementations, but who cares? I don't know. I don't see a positive way. I don't see any other way that they could do it other than the way that they're doing it, and to do it any other way would either come across as sort of crass or, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it would be a good idea to do it.
I think the only time you hear Apple doing that is when they show their iOS adoption, or their their iOS adoption, where they show, you know, say 90% adoption of iOS 10, but then they show the pie chart of how the latest adoption of Android is, and how fragmented it is, and how even the latest phones may be using a 6-year-old version of Android.
That's a good point, but that's also not the same as we invented upgrades or something like that.
Right, you're right.
They're just pointing out that our business model is fundamentally different than Google's, which allows us to make sure that you're running the latest and greatest. Whereas, you know, it's pointing out a very notable flaw in a business model, or a flaw in my opinion, that Google can't easily address. Now, actually, Google has been, and we could go off down the rabbit hole of how they've started putting more things in their core Android services, so that they have more control over upgrading certain functionality, regardless of the version. I need to send you guys an article on that. It was really fascinating what Google's trying to do to fix this problem. But Yeah, I mean, that's similar to. But you know what? They deserve to toot their own horn on that one. I mean, giving the upgrades away for free, making sure they run on multiple generations of hardware. I have a friend who actually told me with a straight face that that was a bad thing, that it runs on so much older versions of the hardware. And it's like, well, I guess you can't win, can you, right? If they said you can't run it on anything more than 2 years old, they're greedy. They're making me go out and buy a new phone. No, they're supporting things up to 5 years old. Well, now it runs like garbage. It's like, well, what do you want, right? I don't know how to make you happy, and I don't think anyone
does. I think
does.
This segment ways into a little bit into another article that I put in the show notes about the Apple Watch must be a flop from Macalope on Macworld, and it's a really interesting article about how people talk out of both sides of their mouth when they talk about the Apple Watch, how it's got to be a flop because they're not selling a lot of them, but then when you compare it to other watch companies, or you know, just the whole Swiss watchmakers, they're selling more than all of them except for Rolex. And I just a really fascinating article of how the watch has been covered in the press from a lot of different angles of how it's got to be a flop, right? Because you don't see a lot of them, But anybody who does have a smartwatch has an Apple Watch. I mean, there's just a small population, a lot smaller population of the market for the Apple Watch, but the market is still there, and they're still making plenty of money off, this. It's almost like an accessory to iPhone is really what it is right now. And I just thought it was a neat article from the perspective of, okay, here's what they said, and then here's what they said, and they're easily talking out of both sides of their mouth when they cover it. And that happens to Apple a lot. It's like the expectation is set so much higher for Apple.
Every product has to be an iPhone level success, and it just can't be. It's an unprecedented product. But to your point, I mean, we've talked about this before in the article that we're going to show here in the show notes mentions it as well. It's sold more than Amazon has sold Echo Dots, and that's when you consider the price differential between those. That's insane that Apple's been able to do that. I mean, that's huge. I have a friend who will often send me these types of articles of must be a flop, and it's like they've sold more than the Echo Dots. And they've sold more than your high-end luxury watchmakers. If that's a flop, then I don't know what a success looks like then, because that was
the perfect
damned if you do, damned if you don't
analogy in the story was when they compared it, because the Dot was the single hottest item last Christmas. You couldn't buy them. Amazon couldn't make them fast enough, and they still haven't sold as many Echo Dots as Apple's selling watches. The scale, when we've talked about this too, the scale at which Apple operates is so much bigger than any other hardware manufacturer that it's just, there is nothing to compare them to. So it's hard to not say, you can't compare it. So it's so hard to make those comparisons because of that. And, they just kind of assume, okay, it's got to be a flop then. Just the scale is crazy. I mean, another story I saw this week was, I think we're pretty much, unless something tragically happens to Apple stock, within the next 6 months, they're going to be the first $1 trillion company ever, like in market cap. I mean, nobody, big, huge oil and gas companies haven't approached that. And now, this small phone and watchmakers... about to hit it.
That is a good point. I mean, this is really, and again, we need to probably return to the AR thing that we talked about before, but to the Apple Watch point, I pay attention a lot to what people have on their wrist. I used to not, but ever since getting the Apple Watch, it's something that I'm keenly aware of. So particularly like when I do things like the other day when I was in Dallas and I'm at a place where there's a lot of technology people, just seeing how many people do I see with Apple Watches on. And it's a lot. I was in the airport. I was in both Atlanta and Dallas, and just people watching, just sitting there watching people walk by. What do they have on their wrist? And I saw all walks of life, various models of Apple Watches. Now, I do occasionally see one that I can't identify, and it's like, there we found an Android watch. There we found this. But it's mostly either Fitbits or Apple Watches that I see on people's wrists, if I'm seeing a smart device, if I'm not seeing like a standard high-end watch. And I think that kind of fits the narrative of what we've seen. You also see that Apple puts a lot of effort into that OS. I think when you see things like that, like as much as I wish the Apple TV was a huge success, look at what we saw at WWDC. The only announcement about TV OS, yeah, we're getting Amazon later, and then they don't mention it again, which that made me very sad. I mean, I'm very happy to get Amazon on the Apple TV, but it's like, really? That's it? But then you look at what they do with the Apple Watch and how they put Siri front and center on it, and they spent a good amount of time on that. Hey, we're making it integrate with fitness machines so you can do NFC and all this other stuff. It's like, they're not going to put money into something unless it's an emerging thing that's growing and has the juice behind it to be something better. I know the apps run like crap. I know that loading stuff onto it, like podcasts and music, takes a long time. But, you know, this is getting better. This is something they still believe in. And I don't think that if the numbers weren't there, even internally, then I don't think we'd be seeing this level. I think the moment you go to WWDC and they have, and this is Apple Watch, we're going to put this thing on it. Next. And then they go into the next thing and that's all they talk about. Then you need to worry a little bit. So maybe we'll see something else with tvOS later this year. I mean, they have developer betas right now, and I actually thought about putting one of the tvOS developer betas on one of my Apple TVs just to see, like, is anything different? Has anything changed? I mean, really? You don't announce anything other than Amazon Instant Video, Prime Video coming to the Apple TV, and that's it? So,
as a little aside, I have a friend who's recently got an Apple TV for the first time. The new Apple TV, she'd had the old one for a long time. We were doing something on mine, and she was like, one thing I really love about the new Apple TV is I can go one place and search for what I want to watch, and it'll tell me all the different places that I can, you know, I can watch it, whether I have to rent it or whether I can get it onto Hulu or Netflix, you know, and I guess I kind of take that for granted now, but, you know, she was just like, that, you know, that's so nice. Like, if I want to find something, then, you know, I can go to one place on there and search all these different places. And she, you know, she's just like, hey, that's really cool.
In interest of Apple didn't invent that, my Roku 3 has had that for a long time as well.
Apple just did it better at scale, right?
So yeah. I will give credit where credit is due. I think with Apple's implementation, though, it does work a little bit better in the sense that, at least, I don't use my Roku all that much because I do spend most of my time in Apple TV. But what I'll say the value of that really is that if the Apple TV knows you've been watching something and you go into the TV app, it will automatically prioritize the newest episodes of those things that you normally watch, which, to my knowledge, my Roku has never done, right? I can go into my Roku and search for something and find it, but the Apple TV is predictive. So let's say that I'm watching, you know, Silicon Valley or Veep or something like that, and a new episode, I go into it Monday morning or even Sunday night, whenever the new episode is posted, the TV update will open, it'll have the previous thing, it'll wait a second, and then it will show from the things that I watch the most to least, these are the newest episodes. So that to me actually is better than any other implementation. That's them putting something unique on it that I didn't see on any other platform, and I own them all, and that is what keeps me coming back to that, is because sometimes I lose track of what's the last episode of whatever that I was watching. And that also works for the TV Anywhere apps too, where it'll, hey, a new episode is posted here. So if I just go into the TV app, if I move from left to right, there's everything that I watch, the latest episodes, and there they are. So to me, that's they're putting their spin on it. But, you know, a quick word, since we're running a little bit long right now, the Apple AR, one of the things they talk about is, and I think I may have sent you guys this too, the tape measure, the virtual tape measure that people were doing in AR was way, way cool, of being able to see how long something was just by moving your phone. Oh man, that's amazing. That is, and I think also one of the reasons these things get adopted, where it's not like, well, maybe Apple didn't invent it. The number of phones that all run the latest version of an OS in someone's hand that can take advantage of these things, that itself is transformative. You accidentally touched on something there, Brad, is you're going to have more Android phones out there in the wild, but if they're all running older versions of the OS and they may never get updates, when you want to introduce new functionality, you really create a fragmented landscape of things that may not be able to do it. If every iPhone that runs iOS 11 has this AR capability to some extent, then that becomes a huge number of people that are all able to take advantage of this without any outlay of capital of going out and getting a new phone. Then that is what the differentiator is. That having that mass adoption instantly is... It's transformative.
And if it's something like AR and you've got all those people that are left behind and someone says to themselves, I've got to have this new feature, they're compelled to go buy a new Android phone if they want to stay in the Android architecture or Android ecosystem. You know, they're compelled to go purchase a new phone with the latest Android operating system.
That's a concern to them. But not having to go out and buy something. Like if you if you have an iPhone 6 from 2014 or 6S, whatever iOS 11 runs on, and to some extent you get this capability, it may be slower or whatever, but you still have it. I mean, that's huge. So I love when we come back to a point that we accidentally didn't mean to make, and then we find a supporting argument for it. So that's good. Well, guys, I think that's about all that we had on the list to talk about this week. Is there anything else you guys want to cover before we're done this week?
I think I'm good.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, that'll do her for this episode then, and I guess I'll talk to you guys next week.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.